Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, December 5th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Latah County Commissioners start discussion of establishing a housing authority for the county. Moscow dealing with a 12% reduction in general fund budget due to no longer being able to transfer utility money. There will be cuts in arts programs, but no layoffs. Latah Recovery Center Director Daryl Keim updates the Moscow City Council on the recovery center and says fentanyl testing strips are illegal for them to distribute in Idaho. And Washington Governor Jay Inslee wants state to allocate $50 million more to fight opioids. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Latah County Commissioners have started a discussion about the possibility of creating a housing authority in the county to address the housing shortage. At the Latah County Commission meeting this afternoon, commissioners heard from various people involved in affordable housing issues in the community, including Sojourners Alliance Executive Director Casey Bolt.
If the profit motive, right, is not meeting that demand, then the alternative is some sort of public institution that then pays attention to these things and can organize around in a way that the market is not, right? And bring resources together to construct, manage, and subsidize housing for people, depending on the specific identified needs.
Bolt gave a quick overview of the scope of the problem in Latah County.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of numbers that suggest that not just in that there's a people that are going without, there's a lot of people that are heavily burdened in terms of their housing costs. So, yeah, like that, thousands of households in this county, right, that are either above 50% of their incomes going towards their housing or greater than 30 but less than 50 going towards their housing.
Avista Regional Business Manager Paul Kimmel, who is also chair of the Inland Northwest Partners and the Inland Northwest Economic Alliance, emphasized working with developers.
What's the role of the city in this? Is it look at regulation? What's the role of the developer in this? You know, we have to offer them a building model that they can generate some sort of return on investment. But so we have to create better certainty and assurances in the market for this to work as well.
Bolt says there's a need for a housing authority, so there will be an organization that's not concerned with making a profit taking the lead.
From my perspective as someone who works with more of the people on the margins, that even if we figure that stuff out, the unleashing what the market can do for us, that so maybe somehow we might be holding it back, there will still always be this need of people that aren't profitable to house. So, Sojourners is not a developer, right? We have what we have, and I am trying to work on improving some of the stuff with the land that we have, but we're not going to look to like acquire land and build anything that at any scale that's going to, I think, address these issues. And part of what I do is that I need to go into the market and work with landlords and property managers about trying to, when I have money that I can use to help people, I still need someone with a house or an apartment that I can rent with it. And often that can be a struggle for various reasons, again, because I'm dealing with people more in the margins. And so the market, to some extent, has sort of pushed them to the side for various reasons. So so that's why I am particularly a champion of this idea, because, again, setting all, you know, the complexities of the market and maybe helping that there's still always going to be that issue. And from my view, only a public authority that doesn't have a, that isn't operating under a profit motive is going to be able to rectify that.
Sojourners Alliance Executive Director Casey Bolt. Commissioner Tom Lamar said there are currently 10 housing authorities in Idaho. The most well-known is the Boise Housing Authority. They all work differently, he said. Lamar also spoke about various local organizations that are doing good on the housing issue, such as the Moscow Affordable Housing Commission, but are only serving a few. He said the county needs to do something on a much larger scale. Here's Tom Lamar, followed by County Commissioner Kathy LaFortune.
Housing authorities that we see around the state of Idaho, we do see very bigger projects happening, and I would like to see us have some bigger projects happening that involve donations of land or big investments in land. You know, if we could have an entity that can attract, say, large private donors or other federal or state donations to investments to get bigger projects happening, that would be really good.
If a housing authority could pursue federal funding or private funding to pay for either, you know, let's say it was donated land, but then pay for the infrastructure, then the developer could come in and build something that would be more affordable.
Lamar also spoke about the potential structure of a housing authority board that would be created.
If we decide that the housing authority is the way to go, which I hope we do, then this board could help form that housing authority, get it set up as a separate entity, and then wish it well and have it do its thing. It becomes a separate entity that can receive grants and so forth and organize people to make housing happen.
And just to be clear, that separate entity is its own, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, a separate governmental entity. It can pursue grant funding. It can take donations of land, take donations of labor, but it cannot. It's not a taxing authority. It's not allowed to collect any kind of property taxes, etc.
Also at the meeting, Moscow City Council members Maureen Laughlin and Julia Parker spoke. Laughlin said a lot of affordable housing efforts in the area have so far focused on those who already make a moderate income and not on the working poor.
I think that some of our focus has gone on kind of more moderate income people. My biggest concern is what about people who are really low income, and we don't really do much, not to say anything bad, but you know. It's a whole thing in terms of how you help someone. And I know that the group in Boise, the LEAD program, has done a lot of work down there. And what I really was impressed with is they put two pieces of property, two houses on a church property. They donated it to them. Mm-hmm. And they had these houses built. And what I thought was really interesting about it, a friend of mine was a president of the church when that was going on. And when they got an increase in their salary, somebody told them they're going to have to move out, and their position with that is, no, we want you to be really stabilized before people, you know, if you make $15 an hour versus 10, then you get kicked out. And so I think that they had a standard in terms of how to encourage people in the long run, and I think that's a very valuable thing to do, is to have a thing in terms of getting people really stabilized before we move them out there and think they can buy a house in Moscow.
At the end of the meeting, Commissioner Lamar suggested people contact the county commissioners with suggestions about how to go about establishing a housing authority for the county. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox assisted with this story.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
Moscow City Council members Maureen Laughlin, Julia Parker, and Haley Lewis had questions for Leyte Recovery Community Center Director Daryl Keim at last night's Moscow City Council meeting concerning how the center deals with homeless people, the availability of fentanyl test strips, and repairs the recovery center has made to Oxford House, which is a home for ex-addicts attempting sober living that was severely damaged by a fire in March. Here is some of that discussion, which came during a report on the recovery center from Director Daryl Keim.
Do you have any resources for you to people like putting on a mattress out in front of the place? Do you have resources for people for homelessness? And what do you reach out to?
Typically, we would reach out for somebody like Sojourners Alliance, but they're for long term. They're not an overnight or single use. In this case, the guy looked at me and said, "Where do I go?" And I said, "Well, you might try the park." There's not a resource that I can think of for somebody who just wants to take to go to sleep.
And then the other question, could you give a quick update on what the status is of the Oxford House and when
the one we're rebuilding?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
When we expect that done?
We are hoping to have it done in time to rent it out around June or July. Mm-hmm. Status report right now, I checked on it last week. They have dried it in, is the term that my contractor used, which means it has a roof. It's got the outer walls. The inner walls are there in stick form, so you can walk through and make out what the rooms will look like. Plumbing is in, or at least the basic first level of plumbing, and electrical is going in this week.
Will it be the same size? And it looks like there's some...
It's the same. Well, it's a little bigger. We were able to save the foundation, and we're going to have the same amount of living space, but we put the garage back in so to alleviate the neighbors had concern about parking. So we put the garage back in, and we extended a little bit of new foundation to make the two yeah, capacity for two in the garage in mm-hmm. filled off garage before it burned down. We extended that to the west side of the building.
Thank you,
Julia.
I was wondering if in your harm reduction program, if you had fentanyl testing strips.
They are not legal in the state of Idaho. I tried.
Yeah. Which was a recent development, right? Was that this last?
No. No, you're thinking of Narcan.
Yeah, it's not over the
which
counter,
is legal,
yeah.
By the way. They just won't allow us to get it for free.
To distribute for
to
free.
To distribute. Yeah. Okay. But fentanyl testing strips are considered paraphernalia in the state of Idaho. I ran that by the county attorney when we started doing all this, because it made sense to me that if we were going to have syringes, the works you need, clean works, and all the stuff and things, that we should have the little 20-cent strip so they could see whether drugs were as safe as could be or not. But they're not legal.
Thank you.
I was going to add to that, this could be a really neat opportunity to have the Recovery Center partner with ASUI, because I know that's something that Tanner's been talking
about.
They've
already been doing that. They're on top of it, and they're getting the same runaround.
Yeah. Okay. We actually, I think it was 2 years ago when I first became aware of that, I reached out to Representative Kingsley, who is very pro-recovery stuff, and he ran a bill, but
I don't even think it got
didn't
a hearing.
Get any traction.
Yeah.
And there were legitimate reasons why it didn't. I want to be on the record saying that, too. I believe it was some sort of law enforcement groups that said that. Well, I don't know exactly what they said at this point, but I remember reading
Darwinism.
It at the time.
Yeah.
And two sides to everything. You know, I saw a good thing, and they said, well, it causes our guys some troubles, and here's where the troubles are. It's life.
I've got a couple more, if that's okay, Mr. Mayor. So for our unhoused folks who are coming through town, if we're seeing an increase in those inquiries, are we just seeing Moscow be an easier place to get to for a whole, like a stopover place? Do we know where these unhoused folks are coming from?
I don't.
Okay.
You'd want to talk to Casey Bolt on
okay.
that.
Okay, yeah.
He's got definite opinions on that.
Ruby.
And we don't seek to be something for the more transient population. We're a recovery right. center for the entire community. There is a strong link, so
yes.
Of course we see that and we deal with it. But it's not our specialty.
That was Leyte Recovery Center Director Daryl Keim answering questions from Moscow City Council members Maureen Laughlin, Julia Parker, and Haley Lewis at last night's council meeting. You also heard briefly from City Council member Sandra Kelly in that clip. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located on South Main Street and is mostly staffed by volunteers who are themselves in recovery from addiction or mental health problems. The Recovery Center started with funds from the state of Idaho in 2015 and operates with funds from the state, a dozen government entities, community organizations, and businesses, as well as donations from about 500 individuals. An Idaho Supreme Court decision has forced Moscow to cut its general fund budget by 12%, causing city departments to reduce spending and causing the city to leave seven vacant positions unfilled. City officials are reacting to a lawsuit by former Lewiston City Council member and former District Judge John Bradbury against the City of Lewiston, in which the state Supreme Court found the city was collecting excessive utility fees and improperly spending city funds. Moscow City officials realized after the Supreme Court decision it can no longer transfer money from its utilities fund to the general fund. The Daily News reports Mayor Art Bedke said, "All of those funds were truncated, so it essentially punched about a 12% hole in the budget overnight." City officials did not realize the impacts of the Supreme Court decision until after they finalized their fiscal year 2024 budget in August, meaning city staff had to go back to the budget and fix parts of it. The city will not lay off any employees, but will leave two police positions, a finance department position, an arts commission position, and three other jobs vacant. Mayor Bedke said all departments will have to reduce spending. Moscow arts manager Megan Cherry, who gave a report on city arts commission activities at last night's city council meeting, announced which specific arts programs will continue to have funding and which will have to be paused for a year. Cherry said Art Walk and Palouse Plein Air will continue as planned. She told the council the Art Walk events, including the street fair in June, as well as Plein Air, which is an outdoor painting event held each fall, have been breaking records in the number of participants as the events continue to grow. Cherry also said the arts department will continue with the Mayor's Arts Awards, the one-time replacement of the mural on the City Water Building at Jackson and A Streets, and the Transit Center Sculpture Garden. A vandal damaged the floor-to-roofline mural on the water building on Jackson Street last year, prompting the city arts department to move forward with a replacement. Cherry said the Transit Center Sculpture Garden project can continue in part because it does not require heavy lifting on the part of the city, and also because the University of Idaho helps with that project. Cherry told the city council last night about the arts projects that will have to be put on hold because of the budget shortfall.
The programs recommended for one-year pause include the Moscow Poet Laureate program. This one's a little tricky to communicate, but we will continue to have a Poet Laureate in this fiscal year. The current Poet Laureate is Stacey Bo Miller. Her term goes through September 30th of 2024. What we ended up with was an instance in which the Poet Laureate submission period or call for applications and the Mayor's Arts Awards call for nominations ended up being on the same year. It's not always this way. This was a particularly bad year for that to happen. And so the adjustment for the Poet Laureate program is to pause the submission period for 1 year and also to reduce the term to 2 years from three. And what that's going to do is make it so that Mayor's Arts Awards and Poet Laureate are doing their submission periods in alternate years. So that's actually a really great sustainable change anyway. And so that shift is part of this recommendation. And then the vinyl wraps and storm drain murals, these are two very popular elements of the temporary collection. They're also really time-consuming, particularly those vinyl wraps. Add to that that our vinyl wrap vendor has recently announced after finishing this year's installations that this was his last year doing the vinyl wrap installations for us. They're a bear to wrestle with, big sheets of vinyl in the wind. So we need to find a new vendor, and this pause will give us a little bit of space to do that. Okay, and then finally, the proposal is to discontinue city operation of a couple of related programs. First, entertainment in the park. This is a summer event that has been produced in partnership with the Moscow Public Library, held at East City Park, and it features children's entertainment and musical entertainment as a second act, often featuring the Mac Band. This event was studied and adjusted in 2020 because it was scheduled in a way that overlapped with not only June Art Walk, but the really busy time for the market, and arts and community event staff were pretty taxed in terms of staff capacity, but also the weather was a little tricky up there at the park in June. You know, there's a lot of rainy days up there in that time of year. And so also we're looking at children's entertainer costs were rising and have continued to rise in those subsequent years. So in 2020, we reduced the performances from 4 or 5 to 2. And have continued with that schedule, that addressed the limitation at the time. But then, with these adjustments that we've had to budget and staff, now we're not able to sustain that as a city operated program at all. Related to that is the Moscow Arts Commission Band. The Moscow Arts Commission Band is a longstanding MAC program. It's 42 years old, and it has featured volunteer musicians in the community. They played between 4 and 5 concerts annually up until that point of the 2020 shift to entertainment in the park. Since then, they've played 2 concerts each year. And sort of coinciding with the budget challenges that came up for the city was a proposal that came in from the band where they laid out a really beautiful vision for an expanded service to the community, including more standalone concerts where they're performing at the park, including more marketing, they've found some additional funding and some volunteer support for the band, and because they have this really strong passion and vision, we've asked them to transition into being an independent organization, taking that kind of vision into the future.
That was Moscow Arts Manager Megan Cherry speaking to the Moscow City Council last night. Two Legislative District Republican Party Central Committees are investigating all 6 of the legislators who represent Idaho Falls for not voting with the far right, and at least 2 of the lawmakers plan on ignoring requests from the Central Committees to come to hearings on their votes in the legislature. The 6 lawmakers include ultra-right Representative Barbara Ehart, who says she's surprised she's been targeted. The District 32 and 33 Republican Party Central Committees, which are separate from the Bonneville County Republican Party Central Committee, are operating under the Idaho Republican Party's new platform enforcement rule, which the party's state central committee adopted earlier this year during the summer meeting. The new rule is being used to determine who to target in primaries for not voting with the right wing in the legislature often enough. According to the Idaho Press, Republican Representative Marco Erickson of Idaho Falls says he received a 55-page packet from the District 33 Republican Party Central Committee last month that listed 14 votes he made in the legislature, which the committee alleges are platform violations. The committee objected to Erickson's votes in favor of Idaho Launch for consolidating the March presidential primary with the May primary, a rural nursing loan repayment program, a bill to require 6 to 12-year-old public schools, a bill to require all 6 to 12 public schools and charter schools to provide feminine hygiene products, a bill appropriating funds for the WAMI Joint Medical Education Program, a bill appropriating funds for colleges and universities. It also alleges he voted against removing school bond and levy election dates in August and March, prohibiting state government and its employees from paying membership fees or dues with public funds with some exemptions, and allowing voters to use an initiative or referendum to reduce the property tax base budget of a city or county. He also voted against establishing the State Board of Education member elections and the Children's School and Library Protection Act. Republican Senator Dave Lent of Idaho Falls received a 38-page document alleging 7 votes that violated the far-right platform, including voting in favor of Republican Governor Brad Little's Idaho Launch Program, which will give $8,000 scholarships to high school graduates who move on to education and training for in-demand jobs. The committee also objected to Lent voting to appropriate funds to join a medical education program, a bill appropriating money to colleges and universities, and for signing a petition calling for a special legislative session to create a May presidential primary. Lent said he voted with the majority of Republican lawmakers on every bill that allegedly violated the state Republican Party platform, except for the launch bill, which passed with Democratic support. Lent told the Idaho Press, "They're using the Idaho Freedom Foundation scoring table to judge me against the platform. I really would have to say, is it the Republican Party or is it the Freedom Foundation doing this?" Representative Ehart said, "It appears the main thing for which I'm being censored are my votes that were in favor of education spending. For my constituents, education spending is a top priority, but even so, I have not gone against the Republican Party platform or conservative principles." The Bonneville County Republican Party Central Committee, which has members of both legislative districts' Republican Party Central Committees, but is a separate entity, released a statement which said the Bonneville County Republican Party strongly supports the right of citizens to petition their government officials, including citizens who make up political parties. "We thank elected officials who are willing to answer questions, address concerns, and stand behind their actions. We recognize the extreme importance of listening, discussion, and engagement with one another, even through rigorous questioning or when not all parties are in complete agreement." Legislative District 33 Republican Party Central Committee Chair Jylene Berger wrote to the lawmakers that she will, quote, "establish an investigative committee of 4 District 33 precinct committee officers elected by the committee and the chair and appointed by the chairwoman. The investigative committee will individually provide a non-confrontational and unbiased atmosphere for the petitioners and legislator to provide full and thorough information, each to their satisfaction." Representative Erickson said he won't participate in the investigative hearings. He said, "I'm not really giving a lot of attention to negativity because I'm just focused on what we're doing well. Usually when I get stuff like that, I just don't care to engage with them." Senator Lent also said he will not participate. Both Erickson and Lent said the committee votes will not be transparent.
The alternative giving markets strives to enhance community well-being and sustainability by celebrating personal charity and community partnerships.
Please something to do.
Beautiful gift cards as you give to your friends' favorite nonprofits.
The Alternative Giving Market of the Palouse is a nonprofit organization with a mission to provide joy during the holiday season by giving residents of the Palouse a meaningful alternative to holiday gift giving and an opportunity to support local nonprofits. The Alternative Giving Market of the Palouse is celebrating its 13th annual giving market this year. You can shop online at agmpalouse.org or stop by at the Latah County Fairgrounds Tuesday, December 12th, 5 to 8 p.m.
We'll be there. Look for KRFP at the Alternative Giving Market at the Fairgrounds, Tuesday, December 12th, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Next May's Idaho Republican primaries are shaping up to be a high-stakes showdown between the more mainstream conservatives and hardliners, which some call extremists, who have taken over much of the Idaho Republican Party apparatus. Mainstream Republicans, who are still very conservative, are upping their game after the far right made major strides in primary challenges to legislators who did not support their entire agenda in 2022. The Idaho Education News reports big donors have already contributed tens of thousands of dollars to Republicans for the 2024 races, even though candidates cannot file for election until March 4th. Donors who are pushing back against the far right in campaign donations to Republicans include the Spokane-based Clearwater Paper Company, which has contributed to 48 legislative candidates for 2024 so far, the Idaho Association of Realtors, which has contributed to 33 candidates, and the Fort Worth, Texas-based Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, which has contributed to 16 Idaho legislative candidates so far. The Idaho Education News reports Du Bois hay farmer and conservative Republican Richard Larson and his wife Peggy Larson have contributed to Idaho Republicans over the years and during the current election cycle have contributed $100,000 to Idaho candidates and political action committees and to more than two dozen Republican candidates who are likely to face opposition from candidates further to the right next year. Larson said radical right-wing people have seized control of the Republican Party, and 2024 will be the most important election since he started giving money to Republicans in the 1990s. He said, "We're just trying to get our party back and save what we've got." A big expected rematch will pitch incumbent Senator Scott Herndon of Sagal, of the Northern Panhandle's 1st Legislative District, against former Senator Jim Woodward, who Herndon defeated in the 2022 Republican primary. The two spent about $215,000 between them in that race. Senator Herndon has been pushing to end the rape and incest exceptions for abortion. In July, Christchurch Deacon Gabriel Wrench of Latah County told an all-male right-wing religious leader gathering in Georgia he would work with Senator Herndon on a bill to eliminate the rape and incest affirmative defense in the state's already restrictive anti-abortion laws. The Idaho Education News reports Herndon is one of the most hardline in the Senate Education Committee and one of the most conservative members of the powerful Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. Herndon has reported $19,000 in contributions so far, including $1,000 each from SMC Properties and Smith Driscoll and Associates. Another rematch will be between Republican Senator Brian Lenny of Nampa and former Senator Jeff Agenbrod, who has raised $5,000 so far this year, which included money from Clearwater Paper. Lenny, who is a hardliner who sits on the Senate Education Committee, has raised $6,000. Republican Lori Bishop of Middleton, who is challenging Republican Senator Tammy Nichols of Middleton, has raised $25,000 so far, Nichols' divisive education savings account bill that would have provided $6,000 scholarships to homeschool students and those attending non-public schools died on the Senate floor this year. So far, Nichols has $3,000 in donations, of which $1,000 is from Idaho Freedom Foundation board member Doyle Beck. The far right has targeted House Education Committee Chair Julie Yamamoto of Caldwell because her committee stopped school choice legislation this year and because she opposed the bounty system bill that would allow judges to award $5,000 to a parent if a school or library provided material deemed harmful to a minor. Yamamoto has reported $8,000 in donations so far, and her Republican opponent, Kent Marmon, has raised $3,000. Yamamoto's ally and House Education Committee Vice Chair, Lori McCann of Lewiston, has raised $6,000 so far. McCann's district includes all of Latah and Lewis counties, as well as about two-thirds of rural Nez Perce County and a small section of the city of Lewiston where McCann lives. McCann has drawn two opponents from the far right for her House seat next year. She has raised $6,000. The opponents are David Dalby of Moscow, who has raised $2,000. Dalby says on his campaign website, "Preserving freedom and liberty is vital so our children and their children can live freely as God intended." Former Latah County Library Board candidate Colton Bennett has also decided to run against McCann in the May Republican primary. Bennett lost his bid for a library board seat, but has raised $1,000 for his campaign for the Idaho legislature.
Today is International Volunteer Day, a celebration of the work people offer to support the causes they care for. Nonprofits across the country rely on volunteers to fulfill their mission. Head of the Idaho Nonprofit Center, Kevin Bailey, says people's sense of wanting to give back is what drives volunteerism.
People understand the need that's there and the need to step up for their communities. If they want vibrant and thriving communities, there's a real need to give back through nonprofits and through volunteerism specifically.
A study by AmeriCorps found the volunteer rate in Idaho was nearly 38%, ranking 10th in the nation. In Idaho, three-quarters of nonprofits have less than $500,000 in annual revenue. Bailey says that means they likely have between one and five paid staff members, which creates a need for more volunteers. But that can strain what little staff resources they have.
So there's this kind of double-edged sword to it. The need is really great. The ability to manage volunteers at scale is somewhat difficult.
Bailey says one underrated aspect of volunteerism is that it gets people involved civically in their communities.
We see a real challenge in our country and in our state, especially with younger generations, making sure that citizens are civically engaged. And oftentimes volunteerism is that first taste or that first entree into civic engagement, which leads to a lifetime of civic engagement.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Washington Governor Jay Inslee is calling for the state to spend another $50 million to fight against opioids flowing into Washington and for public health services to address substance abuse disorders. Governor Inslee said he will ask the legislature to approve the funding request during the upcoming session, which begins in January. The governor said the funding would be spent on public health campaigns in public schools, recovery houses, and expanded access for medically assisted treatment programs, including money for prisons and tribal communities. Inslee said, "We're putting treatment closer to people and we're going to save lives." According to the Washington State Standard, Inslee's supplemental budget request for the next 2 years includes $200 million to fight the influx of opioids, using $82 million from opioid settlements from drug makers and pharmacies, as well as other funds. The Centers for Disease Control reports during the past year, Washington experienced the sharpest rise in overdose deaths in the nation. According to the Washington Department of Health, tribal communities have had a higher rate of overdose deaths during the last year. Inslee said part of the harm reduction program is the manufacture and distribution of the opioid overdose reversal drug Naxalone for first responders and others who encounter an overdose to use. Called by its brand name Narcan, Naxalone is available over-the-counter for about $50 for two doses. Governor Inslee said police departments will also get a portion of the funding for drug stings involving fentanyl. He said people are selling fentanyl for as little as 50 cents for one pill. Inslee said, "We're reaching the people most vulnerable to this fentanyl scourge, and we're getting drugs off the street." The governor also said he wants to create four more community health hubs in addition to the two hubs, which the state health care authority plans to launch next year. The other new health hubs would launch in 2026 and 2027. Under the governor's plan, tribes would get money for their own health programs and to implement a pilot program known as the Icelandic Prevention Model, which is a program that emphasizes community participation instead of concentrating on individual behavior. Native youth lead the Rise Above program, which employs similar techniques. That program would also receive funds. Pullman Police Sergeant Greg Umbright said, "Pullman police have received a number of calls from residents reporting vehicle burglaries and prowls last weekend." Umbright said community members reported about 8 vehicle break-ins Friday night. According to the Daily News, police have some leads but no suspects so far. Umbright did say police arrested a man in the Jack in the Box parking lot on suspicion of a vehicle prowl, but that arrest is not related to this past weekend string of vehicle prowls. Umbright reminded the public to park in well-lit areas and remove any bags of valuables from their cars, or at least keep those items out of sight. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there's a 50% chance of rain tonight, mainly before 10 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, low 43. And tomorrow, 60% chance of rain, mainly after 5 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy, high 51. Wednesday night, 100% chance of rain, snow level 5,800 feet, lowering to 4,000 feet after midnight, low 37. West winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. And on Thursday, 80% chance of precipitation, rain before 10 a.m., then rain possibly mixed with snow. Snow level 3,100 feet, high 41, southwest winds 15, gusts up to 25, little or no snow accumulation expected. Currently 48 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. And be sure to check out the gift cards you can give for donations to KRFP through the Alternative Giving Market. That's at agmpalouse.org, or you can visit KRFP. We'll have a table at the Alternative Giving Market of the Palouse when it has its in-person event next Tuesday, 5 to 8 p.m. at the Latah County Fairgrounds. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach and Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by Hotchins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hotchins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hotchins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hotchins at 208-882-5536.
KRFP, Moscow.